I'm so glad you're back with me today for another episode of the Life on Target podcast. As always, I'm your host, and this episode is a particularly heavy current events episode. It is an interview because I, the host, am actually a former hostage rescue specialist, and this gives me a very unique perspective to offer to you today on the events surrounding the shooting in Uvalde, Texas. It's about 2 weeks ago that that tragic event unfolded and has been center stage ever since. And I haven't stopped thinking about it for very long, and I'm really kind of excited to give some of this stuff to you to chew on and start hopefully helpful conversations locally where you are. For 5 years of my life, my primary purpose was training for and being on call to resolve hostage situations via extreme violence of action and surgical application of force. I've said it before, anyone can learn to shoot, but I got to the point where I was paid not to shoot. And that's the key. Having the skills to shoot accurately and discern targets in a very dynamic environment. And there are just a very small handful of people that have that capacity. And I would say I don't have it anymore because it is a perishable skill. It is something that must be repeatedly trained on to maintain. And even then, when you get called to do it, you have a healthy dose of humility to know that it is the most dynamic situation. It is the most difficult thing to resolve. And you hope and pray that your skills and training to that point are enough to allow you to execute effectively. I was also sent by a U.S. ambassador to an active terrorist hostage situation and worked with a multinational group of leaders on the ground until the situation was resolved. I've trained with SWAT teams and many police units, the FBI Hostage Rescue Task Force, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Have tons of exposure to this kind of thing. There's lots of subjects that I probably should be quiet about, but this isn't one of them. As our political leaders, social justice warriors, sometimes those are one and the same, and anarchist idiots all offer their opinions on the interwebs. It is my hope that this episode will provide you some helpful information to see through the fog that has descended on our society. If at any point in this podcast I turn a light on for you, my hope is that you'll pause and send this episode to as many people as you think is applicable. I really want this to get out to local communities as much as possible because this is an issue that we all are facing and we're all on the front lines in this war. It's a war. First of all, children being killed by gunmen is tragic, and we as individuals need to be able to maybe grieve with those that have lost loved ones a little bit longer before we offer our political opinions. That's maybe one reason why I have waited 2.5 weeks or so and just kind of turned the issue over and over and over in my head before I've recorded this episode. I think it's important that we have the ability to lament and grieve with people and not lose sight of the tragedy. But everybody has made this political, so we have to study and to think about these things in that way and form opinions. And ultimately, this gets back to truth. So the very foundation of this issue is, like we're talking about, is truth, but it's also sin. Until Jesus comes back, vile people are going to be shooting kids. It's just a reality we have to face. And, you know, at the same time, there need to be people that protect those children. And the heart of this argument is mostly about who can do that best. I'd like you to go back, if you haven't, if you're new to the podcast, it's got shared with you or whatever, some more context about my mindset regarding this kind of thing. It can be found in two particular episodes to this point that I've deemed a theology of violence. So we'll link those episodes in the bio. That's where I give a little bit more thorough theological framework for my views about lethal force, about the capacity to be dangerous, to have strength, to have the means, the tools at your hand, at your fingertips, and the knowledge and the training and the spiritual framework to be able to use those tools well in times of crisis. So those are a little bit more the verses, the catechism things, the things that kind of are the foundation for what I believe is a very clear prescriptive in Scripture that those that many of us, especially those in leadership, have a duty and an obligation to protect the weak, the downtrodden, and to do so boldly and to prepare ourselves for that. So check those episodes out. Let me paint a more clear picture for you here. Those of us that have actively and actually conducted raids and hostage rescues know that the difference between the bird's eye truth and the ground truth are very different things. That is, when we did military operations, there were commanders and things sitting in what we call the tactical operations center, where they were watching live feeds of the actual assaults going on. And those of us that were operators on the ground know that even the people sitting back at the operations center where you launched for the mission from, their opinion of what happened on the ground and what actually happened, it can be completely different. And none of us got a live video shot of the events aside from some mobile footage from outside from some parents and whatnot. We didn't get the bird's eye view. So we are even going to have a less clear picture than those military commanders that have a very unclear picture compared to what actually happened on the ground. So I think it's helpful to think about that, to be humble about this, to understand that it's difficult to decipher what's going on. And the actual, what actually happened on the ground is probably somewhere at the, it lies at the intersection between as many opinions as are, or memories of the events as are people that were there. So it's just, it's going to be foggy. It's going to be difficult to discern. And it's a very difficult, I think we should have some empathy for the law enforcement leadership, even the ranking law enforcement on the ground, and the sheriff of the county, the police chief, and the people that likely got brought in very quickly to actually offer decisions or make decisions and command the situation, that it's very hard to imagine the complexity of these situations. And I'm not trying to justify anybody's actions, but I am saying that I think we have to be able to stand in that tension between the fog of war or the fog of a hostage situation that is around everybody, even when they're training, and realize that that's just the most difficult situation imaginable. That being said, in preparation for this podcast, I pulled up the most accurate timeline we have on one screen in my office, and then the Google Maps Street View on the other. And I just tried to, go back and take the timeline and look at the ground and walk through the events that unfolded in an effort to kind of take in what happened. And then I'm going to filter that time that I spent kind of going through the timeline through my experiences and kind of offer the following conclusions to y'all. So people don't understand the level of training that you have to be able to be confident at executing a hostage rescue successfully. I mentioned that a little bit earlier, but fear actually makes this a lot harder. There's a chemical cocktail that happens in your body physiologically. We've talked about it in mental toughness and things, that physiological state that is normal for you as an individual. And then hostage rescue happens, you're no longer at homeostasis. All these different things in your body are reacting to this stress, the adrenaline, the change of your pH, all these things. And Grossman talks about this and On Killing the book. He's a predominantly an academic on this, but one of the leading kind of guys that there's just so many instances where police officers have gunned down people that were unarmed and swore in their testimony that he was armed and that that there was a gun and kind of sometimes humorous that, oh, somebody must have taken or whatever. But they just, when fear takes a hold of you, when that flight or fight kicks in and you haven't been accustomed to handling that chemical cocktail, you don't know how you're going to act. And your memory is actually false, or your the fear overrides your body's ability to accurately visually see what's going on. And very, very few people have experienced this to the point where they become comfortable under fire, or they understand and they operate and they're able to make decisions clearly under fire. And by and large, that's not the police force as a whole. Most people, most soldiers, most cops haven't been shot at. And I'm not saying like out on the beat and then somebody cracks a shot out the window or whatever. That's what like most people, but I'm saying bullets whizzing by your face and what actually happens when that happens and have it happen repeatedly so that you get better at it. That's literally not something that is able to be replicated for our police force. Thankfully, because we live in a free and peaceful society at this point, and our most cops just don't understand what it's actually like to get shot at. Also, being on the flat range doesn't mean that you're going to be good in these close quarters environments. I've trained with SWAT teams before. I've been very impressed with them and their ability to engage targets on the ground and shoot steel really fast. We throw them in one of our shoot houses, change the targets around, and it is abysmal. And these are the best for large metropolitan areas. Their ability to decipher or to discern the threat targets and an array of targets and changing landscape is terrible. And it literally just comes down to reps. They don't have the reps. They don't have the time. They're doing all these, they're serving high threat warrants. They're doing these other things that they have to do. There's so many different, and it's a good thing. Our citizens come with rights that they can't go on top of. So they have to conduct things differently than I did when I was overseas in the military. They have to preserve these constitutional rights of citizens. So they're generally at a disadvantage for the sake of our rights as citizens. Real hostage rescue situations are the most dynamic as they can get, especially at a school where there's kids everywhere, they're scared, there's teachers in this situation. But that being said, if you're in that role as a person, you had better have spent some time before you and God and come to grips with the fact that this is going to potentially be something you're called on and be ready to do it with whatever training that you have available up to that point. Also, those of you out there that think that you're just going to storm in there and make the situation better because you've been to the flat range a couple times and you can give a pretty good shot group, I envy your ignorance. Our society in general is a very risk-averse society versus being principled, concerned about the truth, and having leaders that are willing to make hard calls. And this is a direct side effect of eroding of moral truth in our society. The fact is that we can't say there's no such thing as male and female and you can be whatever you want, and also think our leaders are going to be able to make the hard calls required to send people into harm's way when that may or may not go well for them, and maybe kids get hit as well. Because I was just talking to my wife this morning about it. The police chief maybe isn't thinking this through in a premeditated way, but if you don't have principle, and if you're an officer on the ground and you don't have principles the same way and you haven't thought this through, you're immediately going to be risk averse. You don't want to be the one that shoots a kid. You don't want to be the one that injures a teacher. You don't want to be the one that's plastered on the media like we see all this stuff as the one that did it. So inaction is actually better. It's better to just sit outside, spin the narrative about how terrible this guy was, use it for political gain, than to take action. I'm not trying to say that that is what happened here. I'm just trying to say that as that is a side effect in a society that doesn't value truth. And the side effect is everybody stands by and doesn't act on anything because nobody knows what's right and wrong and everything's been blurred. And there is, from when the shooter entered the school at 11:33 a.m. and then was finally killed at 12:50, what happened in that time? It's because we don't have principled leaders. It's because we don't have the ability to act boldly. We have peaceful society. We have soft men in leadership. We have soft men on duty. Not saying that about everybody, but I'm just saying generally that's where we are. And by and large, the 80% rule applied, not just in business, but even for us in the military. We would make a plan based on what we had, come up with the 80%, and then launch and rely on our training, rely on our skills, rely on our relationship and communication with each other to bring about the best result possible. And that's just really hard to do in a hostage rescue situation. Another thing, the shooter is going to answer for his actions before God. And I don't want to sound like a typical liberal when I say this, but the fact of the matter is the tragedy of this is that the shooter was failed likely by many, many people in his 18 years or almost 18 years on this planet. And he shot his grandmother in the face before heading to the school. He didn't have a father figure. And the fix of things lies in the church bringing moral truth, bringing God's word back into our society and making our society a moral society again, more than it does in taking away guns, because people will still figure out how to harm other people if they're evil. If there's no guns, they'll use cars. If guns aren't allowed, they'll use box cutters, just like we see in the 9/11 terrorist attacks. They will find a way to perpetrate evil on the weak. And the question is, who will stand there to protect them, and whose job is it, and who will do it the best? What does this mean for you as a Christian, especially as a man who wants to lead in his community? Christians have to have balls. The church has to have balls. Yeah, I said it. I know it's uncouth. We have to understand the situation. One pastor said, "It is time that the church today should be refreshingly bold for the truth in the face of false teaching, confronting the world's attempt to neutralize righteousness and exalt wickedness. Righteous boldness is not violent aggression, but an insistence that the truth must be proclaimed undiluted and that wickedness should be repudiated. Without such bold clarity, believers in Jesus will not know what is true. They will become spiritually unstable as they succumb to whatever false, fashionable idea is current." He cites Ephesians 4, verses 14 and 15. "So that you may no longer be children tossed to and fro by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness in deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into Him who is the head, into Christ. The result," this is back to the pastor's words, "the results will be a reduction of gospel proclamation, increasing secularization, and a dysfunctional church that is not fit for purpose. It is time to be bold for the truth. When we are silent while the truth is destroyed, we allow evil forces to continue unchecked." We cannot allow evil forces to continue unchecked. You have to acknowledge that you will die at some point, but you get a new body as a Christian who believes in the second coming of Christ. I remember the moment very distinctly on the battlefield where I had to walk this theology out, when I had to run out to the middle of the field and drag one of my injured comrades back, but not before I told my guys to lay down a wall of lead in the enemy's direction. We have to remember sound tactics, but then boldness. Speed is security. You have to start now where you are, getting better. If you're the one in your community that's responsible to protect, in a school, in a church, etc., you cannot train enough. You have to think about the situations and be prepared. You have to engage kindly but boldly on Second Amendment issues. Don't give up your freedoms so those that stand outside while your kids are murdered can protect you. Or worse, those who hide in Washington trying to spin everything so they can steal from you more protect you. We know that's not going to work out well for anyone. Be bold and stand up for that. As always, this podcast provided any value to you, you think it will be helpful for other community leaders as they frame the situation, as they think about these things, as they try to figure out what are they supposed to do, where are they supposed to stand on these issues. I know I maybe opened up a lot of things more so than provided it a lot of neat little conclusions. I think that's what the result of things like this is. It's so many overlapping issues. It's so many things coming together, and we just lack the ability as a society to sit with stuff in nuance and to understand the tensions between the two sides and to think about it clearly. Hopefully, I've enabled you to do that today. Thanks for listening. As always, have a good one.